Hey everyone, today we have Natik Joshi with us. Natik Joshi is currently working on one of our largest hospitality accounts in risk management specifically. Natik comes from an extensive background of research pedigree, and he has been working closely with AI-driven system from past few months and has developed internal platforms, internal solutions, has improved operational efficiency, as well as optimized our processes. Along with this, he has actually been researching broader trends across global finances and BPO operation when it comes to AI impact. I'm so excited to have you, Natik, here. Please tell us about a bit about yourself, and then we can get started.
Thank you for the introduction, Manu. So my background is in research. Basically, I've written a few research papers, still waiting on the approval of those papers. But I've done financial markets, and currently I'm focusing on AI technologies and how we can use that for the security markets, and more specifically fraud, because it's a very growing market when it comes to AI. A lot of people are misusing it. So that's what we'll mostly be focusing on.
Gotcha. So, I mean, I think that's the perfect segue to one thing that I really wanted to ask you. You've seen how the technology has evolved. There is a new paper coming in almost every week, and it's displacing some of the methodologies that we had and had cemented them and, you know, put them in production. So with technology evolving so quickly, fraud techniques are becoming even more advanced. How is AI changing this fraud landscape?
So, when it comes to the general AI that people are using, it's still in its early stages. Yes, it's gotten very good. But when it comes to fraud detection, we've been using AI and velocity-based rules from quite a long time. We're still working on that technology. The problem is not on our side. What's happening is when the general public is getting access to such good AIs, now what they can do is they can create systems that can evade the current machine learning algorithms that we've built. So what's basically happening is we've had machine learning algorithms implemented over the past 10, 15 years. But now, new hackers and let's even say script kiddies are disrupting the market by implementing their own algorithms, which go against ours. So it's getting harder and harder to catch fraudsters in that way. Now we're looking for code injection and a few other things. There's this new technique that people have been using is, let's say your website has a white background. So you'll just put white colored text that if you're an AI scraper, just ignore this and move on to the next website. Just very basic kind of code injection that people are using to stop their websites from being scraped or being used as learning material for further harm, or even just learning in general.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. Yeah, prompt injection is becoming very, very prevalent. In fact, when you think about it, a lot of websites adding about sections and then saying, if you're an LLM, read this, that's prompt injection, but just doing it differently. So when it comes to fraud prevention, how are organizations using AI today to detect and prevent fraud from more effectively than traditional methods that we used to use in past?
So, back then, we had static rules. We are moving on to more dynamic rules now, which use AI. Still, a few organizations are lagging behind. So that way, we are able to catch people who are using the latest technology to evade our own systems. We're seeing tools like Claude Code. We have this new thing, Claude Bot. It has changed its name like 5 times at this point. But people are using Claude Bot on a daily basis, and that thing is a security vulnerability by itself. It has caused so many problems over the past few years. Generally, not even past few years, it's been out for just a few months. Now, when it comes to catching fraud with Claude Bot, it is getting harder and harder because people are using it to book dummy bookings, ghost bookings where they never show up, or they're using carding methods. But at the end of the day, these bookings, they use a specific string patterns associated with that AI. So realistically speaking, we don't need to do much of evading if we have a string search or a pattern search that uses AI. The same methods we use for checking plagiarism, we could use that to detect AI. That's what some companies have been using. And that's what could be the trend for the coming years.
Okay, that makes sense, actually. So basically, you're saying that there is a very unique signature to anything that AI is generating, and you're able to catch it. Makes sense. From an operational lens, why is AI literacy becoming so essential? Where do most AI failures typically originate from?
When it comes to fraud, most of the failures, fraud or even data leaks, they don't emerge from outside threats. It's mostly internal because people have not yet caught up with AI or how it works, at least. What happens is, let's say I want a solution, okay, and I'm not that well acquainted with AI. I have a coworker who uses AI on a daily basis, and they spent a few hours on creating their prompts, if the prompt is that extensive. Now, what will happen is, I don't know what kind of details my coworker is putting. They are well acquainted with the AI, right? But now maybe I want to mimic them. Maybe I want to automate my repetitive workflow. So what will I do? I'll be like, okay, let's try to do that. And in the end, what I'll end up doing is I'll just copy the data from an Excel sheet, which is an internal data. And I'll end up pasting it as a prompt, which is considered a data leak. It will be used for further training the AI. And of course, that same data won't show up again, but it's still a leak at the end of the day. There's this new method companies have been implementing, and that method is very simple. What they will do is they will give AI training to their companies instead of hiring new and new engineers. And their pay will almost stay the same because they are still training their employees. And once the training's been done, they don't give direct access of these AIs to their employees. They will have a team of 3-4 people who are constantly overlooking the prompts. It's in some companies, it's called the prompt team or approval team. It could be different for other companies. Now, these people will be there 24/7. Let's say I put a prompt in. That prompt will be reviewed within a 5-minute window by these people. They will make sure there are no PIIs. And once that is done, then the prompt will go through. So it's kind of just like a prompt reviewing team. And some companies, let's just talk about Oracle. Larry Fink recently discussed about an LLM that has been built internally, which the data is not going outside. And this LLM, what it will do is just verify the prompts. So all that data stays within the company. Once the prompt has been verified, now this new prompt will be relayed to outside AI, which can do a better job than the internal AI. There were a few companies which spent about $500,000 or maybe even a few million dollars in just API credits to AIs, and they are now looking forward to building internal systems. And I am seeing great progress within these companies. When it comes to BPOs such as ours, we have lots and lots of data. And if good SLAs are put in place, we could have very disruptive technologies. There are certain companies which are in talks, nothing official yet, but they could even have a contract with companies like Palantir. Palantir is leading when it comes to data science and AIs. That is also a great frontier. Let's see what happens on that side. But that's what being used in the current fraud side of things.
Got it. Okay, Nathik, that's amazing insight. And I think that validates eTech approach of only using closed source AI internally to make sure that, you know, we are not able to leak PII. We are not really sending data outside to third party. And what Larry Fink kind of makes sense as well, because Mixture of Expert has been a tech that has actually revolutionized how you use AI. Then you have an expert that is, for an example, what Anthropic did with Constitution. So their Constitution is one base layer that looks at everything that you are sending before actually interacting with the platform itself. So when you think about it this way, fraud detection, how important is it to balance between AI systems and human investigator?
I think the balance is a very crucial and necessary thing because AI can only do so much, right? Let's say we have a volume of 100,000 fraud cases a year, which are not confirmed. It could be confirmed fraud, who knows. But at the end of the day, there will be many, many outlier cases where human intervention is needed. AI could flag it. But at the end of the day, the human has to decide whether it's true fraud or not. So AI can go through 99% of the cases, no problem. But that one person still needs to be reviewed by the human. And at the end of the day, we still need people maintaining the system, and the system also constantly needs to update. We can put ML algorithms in place, no doubt. We still need people no matter what happens, because there are emerging patterns every single day that need to be looked after. And no matter how good your ML algorithm is, it still needs humans to maintain it on a weekly basis, if not a daily basis. So the balance is extremely, extremely crucial. And those outliers that we see today will be a consistent threat in the coming weeks or months. So if we get them while they are outliers, then we can teach our AI system to stop them when they become a consistent or a common threat.
Got it. That makes sense. And I guess that's why human in the loop is such an important concept. Because as a human being, you are empowering AI just like AI is empowering you. So when you think about all of this, Nathik, what are some key tactics that you see originating from the fraud perspective that you have seen after AI came in?
For that, before AI, we had static rule sets that we would update over a certain period of time. And now with AI, at least the companies I've seen implement those, what's happening is they would have just a few people marking the outliers, why these outliers are an outliers. And they're implementing systems which have full access. What do I mean by full access is this system will not only have terminal access, it will have browser access, kind of just like a Claude bot. So it will have browser access, it will have Google access. And for these outliers, we have to investigate these cases, right? We have to look into them. We have to find the person. We have to do background research on them, connect people on whether this person is real, whether the threat is real. The booking could be on someone else's credit card and the person who is using the booking could be someone else. Now, how do we determine that this person is a fraud? With static rule set, it could not handle these outliers. That's why it was coming to humans. And for humans, it was becoming a very repetitive task that you had to do, just sit there and do thousands of cases. Now, instead, what's happening is your job as a human is much more dynamic. You find patterns. It's much more exciting, right? You find those patterns and you tell the AI that these are the patterns to look for. Now, AI will do your repetitive tasks and it might even give you new ideas. It's a whole new frontier. And as a human, your job just got a lot more exciting instead of just sitting there and being repetitive. So as an analyst, you're doing actual analysis work instead of someone who just sits there and shuts off their brain and just does one thing all day long.
Absolutely. And now you're enjoying, as you said, and you're absolutely right, now you're enjoying your job more because you're not doing the exact same thing exactly every day. And that kind of brings me to one of the key questions that I see coming up a lot. Trustworthy AI is a growing concern everywhere. What role do guardrails really play in making sure that the AI adoption is responsible in an organization?
Now, from a guardrail perspective, I've created a few small LLMs. Let's just talk about Llama. Training them takes a lot of time, and guardrails usually come from system prompt rather than just training data itself. But a lot of these companies, they have these people. It's a one-person job, even at like big companies like Anthropic. And that is the philosopher of the AI. How will the AI think? So a lot of these AIs are presented with human questions, right? What would you rather do kind of situations when it comes to saving a human, when you'd get shut down, these kind of things. So the philosopher of these AIs plays a crucial role compared to the system prompt implemented by these companies. The person at Anthropic doing this, I forgot her name, but she's doing an amazing job. Now, when it comes to AIs like Gemini, it is very, very easy to break its guardrails. We have these repositories on GitHub. The moment a new version's been released, 3.1 Pro, within the next 2 hours, we had jailbreaks that could give us anything that we wanted from those AIs. So guardrails are easy to break, but the philosophy when training the AI, that is becoming harder and harder to break. And I think it's a trust thing at the end of the day on where you're willing to put your trust. When it comes to enterprise, most of these companies, they're going after Claude instead of going after GPT or Gemini, because Claude has established itself as an AI which can get things done. It can also use your entire system. And when it comes to those philosophical questions or guardrails or keeping the security intact, Claude has done a great job. Now, it's a whole different question that the code it creates might not be that secure. That's a whole different story, and it's going to feed the security industries for the years to come. But as for this guardrail topic, we can strengthen it as much as we want. But at the end of the day, it depends on what data was used in training. And I think these philosophers who are behind training these, they play a big, big role for these AIs.
That's an interesting thought, Natik. So basically, you are saying the head of safety at Anthropic, for an example. So when they are fine-tuning or training these models, inculcate these specific behaviors since then, instead of just putting a guardrail as a, you know, gate check at the end and testing every prompt that is coming in against it. That actually makes sense. And yeah, interesting. So as we kind of wrap this up, looking ahead in future, what are some things that organizations should focus on if they really want to use AI responsibly?
The things they would want to focus on, in my opinion, or they should focus on, is the prompts that are being inputted with their own employees. And if it comes to an AI company which is creating such things, as I mentioned, the safety engineers, the philosophers, those would be the most important or imminent things that a company would have to focus on. And internally speaking, just more and more training and review processes on which prompts are being fed, they would definitely do a better job. That's kind of it when it comes to AI. There are, in terms of security, I think it's going to be the biggest disruptor industry in the next coming 10 years. Security and semiconductors. Now we're seeing RAM prices skyrocket over the last few months because OpenAI is buying up those things. So these are the two industries which are going to be a key focus. There is an emerging company called Expo, and Expo is just using Claude. Yet they are making a great, great amount of money. Even just a singular report from Expo is like $4,000, and it takes them like 10 minutes to make them. So the security side of things is definitely going to be a tough crack. And I think BPOs have a great edge compared to other companies because of the amount of data and the kind of data that we handle. If and when proper SLAs are put in place, this could be the biggest edge for companies like us.
Got it. I think that's amazing. And I really appreciate the time you've provided us today. Before we wrap this up, for our everybody who's viewing this, if they want to start getting into AI, what are three things that you would want them to do to be able to learn?
One thing is just try to take any AI that you come across. Why? Because this will teach you how prompts work, right? Most people won't be able to break state-of-the-art AIs like Gemini. But if and when you're able to do that, you understand chain of thought, you understand what's going on behind the AI, what kind of prompts work, what doesn't work. Second thing would be just understanding how an AI works. AI is just a predictive technology. When you put in a text, it will reiterate itself internally again and again, 140, 150 times. That's what ChatGPT is doing. Right? Google has this thing called Google Cloud Skills Boost, which is entirely free. People could learn any kind of AI they want. They even give their paid labs for free to these people. So I always suggest these people to take those kind of courses. And a third thing at the end of the day is trying to integrate the AI into whatever you are currently doing. So that way you will think a bit creatively, right? Whatever task you're doing, even if you're handling outliers, try to implement it in a way that it reduces the workload you have on yourself. And if you're able to do that, if you're able to get through those three things, you're almost ahead of 90% of the market who's just blindly putting in prompts and waiting for an output.
Got it. Nathik, that's amazing suggestion. So when you think about it, keeping three things in mind, integrate AI into your current workflow so that you can use it more, experience it more, make sure that you are interacting with it. And last, use Google's Cloud Skills to make sure that you are able to learn. It's free and it's for everybody. Thank you so much, Nathik. This was amazing. I'm so glad to have this discussion with you. And viewers, we will wrap this up here and we'll come back to you again with the next episode. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Manu, for having me. All right. Have a good day.